And now to the feature attraction of this evening's program. As we told you last week, we were going to have Mr. Sidney Bechet on the program this week. As you know, he has been playing at the Savoy on Mass Avenue for quite some time now, and I think you ought to hear him in person at this time. Mr. Sidney Bechet.
Hello, Wynn. Good evening, everybody. Well, Wynn, I want you to know that it's really a pleasure for me to be here, and anything that I can straight you out on about some of those old records, I'll be very pleased to do so.
Well, Sidney, on some of your earliest records, there is very little known, that is, on the Clarence Williams Blue Five sides, except the fact that you are on them. Could you give us, perhaps, a little inclination, if you can remember back that far? It's an awful long time, but perhaps who played trumpet on Wildcat?
Well, it was Clarence Williams. He played the piano.
Sidney Bechet was the first important jazz soloist on records in history, beating Louis Armstrong by a few months. A brilliant soprano saxophonist and a clarinetist with a wide vibrato that listeners either loved or hated. Bechet's style did not evolve much through the years, but he never lost his enthusiasm or creativity. A master at both individual and collective improvisation within the genre of the New Orleans jazz, Bechet was such a prominent player that trumpeters found it very difficult to play with him. Bechet wanted to play lead, and it was up to the other horns to stay the hell out of his way. Welcome to Dead Wax 78s. I'm your host, Sean, and hey, I'm back from a little break. You know, I needed that Christmas break off. This episode is about, as you heard, Sidney Bechet. An early jazz pioneer, Bechet propelled the genre forward, transitioning from the constraints of ragtime into a freer, solo-based structure that modern jazz is built on. Bechet was born in New Orleans in 1897 to a middle-class Creole family. His father, Omar, was both a shoemaker and a flute player, and all four of his brothers were musicians as well. His older brother, Leonard Victor Bechet, was a full-time dentist and a part-time trombonist and a bandleader. Sidney learned and mastered several musical instruments that were kept around the house. He began on the cornet, though. Mostly by teaching himself, he decided to specialize in the clarinet, which he played almost exclusively until about 1919. He started off playing the clarinet at age 6, studying with some of the masters of Dixieland, including Lorenzo Tio, Big Eyed Louie, and Nelson Delisle, and George Biquette. He started to perform with his brother's band at a family birthday party, debuting his talents to much acclaim. Featuring polyphonic collective improvisation, New Orleans jazz was a music in which the group was the primary focus. Bechet, along with his contemporary Louis Armstrong, developed a new, looser style of playing that would later develop into what we'd call swing. He influenced the widening differences between jazz and ragtime. Bechet liked to have his sound dominate in a performance, and trumpeters reportedly found it pretty difficult to play alongside him. He performed in parades with Freddie Keppard's brass band, the Olympia Orchestra, and in John Robichaud's dance orchestra from about 1911 to 1912. He performed with Buck Johnson, the Eagle Band of New Orleans, and in 1913 to 1914 with King Oliver in the Olympia Band. And from 1914 to 1917, he was touring and traveling, going as far north as Chicago and frequently performing with Freddie Keppard. Here's side one, Wildcat Blues. Thank you. In 1917, Bechet took his first of many trips across the Atlantic to perform in Europe, touring with William Marion Cook's Southern Syncopated Orchestra. He impressed international audiences with his expressive melodies and trademark wide vibrato. It was on this trip that he bought his first soprano saxophone, the instrument that he would later become best known for. So back in the U.S., Bechet made his recording debut in 1923 with Clarence Williams. And during the next 2 years, he appeared on records backing blues singers, interacting with Louis Armstrong and playing some stunning solos. He was with Duke Ellington's early orchestra for a period and at one point hired a young Johnny Hodges for his own band. However, from 1925 to 1929, Bechet was of course overseas, traveling as far as Russia, but getting in trouble aside from his lyrical soprano playing. Sidney Bechet was infamous for his fiery and unpredictable temperament that would occasionally put his career in jeopardy. According to his autobiography, he was sentenced to 11 months in prison during a trip to Paris for accidentally shooting a woman before being deported. He was in fact aiming at a fellow jazz musician who he was arguing with over a chord change. He demanded a duel, claiming that Sidney Bechet never plays the wrong chord. After his release, he was deported to New York, and arriving soon after the stock market crash of 1929, well, he joined Lorenzo Tio and also came to know trumpeter Roy Eldridge. Here's side two, Summertime. Thank you. his saxophone sound could be described as emotional, reckless, and large. He often used a broad vibrato, similar to some New Orleans clarinetists at the time. In 1919, Ernest Ansmet, a Swiss classical music conductor, wrote a tribute to Bechet, one of the earliest, if probably not the first, to a jazz musician from the field of classical music, linking Bechet's music with that of Bach. Most of the 1930s were comparatively lean times for Sidney. He worked with Noble Sizzle on and off and had a brilliant session with his New Orleans feet warmers in 1932. But he also ran a tailor's shop, which was more notable for its jam sessions than any money it might have made. However, in 1938, he had a hit recording of Summertime. Hughes Panisse featured Bechet in some records and soon was signed to Bluebird, where he recorded quite a few classics during the next 3 years. Sidney Bechet worked regularly in New York and appeared in some of Eddie Condon's town hall concerts, and in 1945 he tried unsuccessfully to have a band with the veteran trumpeter Bunk Johnson, whose constant drinking killed the project. Jobs began to dry up about this time, and Bechet opened up that he hoped he would be able to open a music school. He only had one pupil, and Bob Wilbur became his protege. Here's side three. Hold tight.
Fresh fish, fresh fish, fresh fish. Some of them. Hold tight, hold tight, hold tight, hold tight. Food you nag a sack, I want the seafood, mama. Shrimp and rice, they're very nice. Hold tight, hold tight, hold tight, hold tight. Food you nag a sack, I want the seafood, mama. Shrimp and trout, they knock you out. I like pork and mackerel too. I crave butterfish. Don't have oysters, clams, but do. I want a seafood dish. Hold tight, hold tight, hold tight, hold tight. Fluid and I can sack. I want the seafood, mama. Shrimps and rice, they're very nice.
Hold Tight, Hold Tight was composed by Bechet's guitarist Leonard Ware and two session singers with claimed contributions from Bechet himself. The song became known for its suggestive lyrics and then for a series of lawsuits over songwriter royalties. But in 1939, Bechet and the pianist Willie the Lion Smith led a group that recorded several early versions of what was later called Latin Jazz. adapting a traditional merengue, rumba, and Haitian songs to the jazz idiom. So on July 28, 1940, Bache made a guest appearance on the NBC radio show, The Chamber Music Society of a Lower Basin Street, playing two of his showpieces with Henry Levine's Dixieland Band. Levine invited Bache into the RCA Victor recording studio, where Bache lent his soprano sax to Levine's traditional arrangement of Muskrat Ramble. On April 18, 1941, as an early experiment in overdubbing at Victor, Bache recorded a version of the pop song The Sheikh of Araby, playing six different instruments: clarinet, soprano saxophone, tenor saxophone, piano, bass, and drums. An unissued master of this recording was included in the 1965 LP, Bache of New Orleans, issued by RCA Victor. Here's side four, Petite Fleur. Sidney Bechet's fortunes changed drastically in 1949. He was invited to the Salle Pleyel Jazz Festival in Paris and caused a sensation and decided to move permanently overseas. And in 1951, he migrated to France permanently after his performance as a soloist at the Paris Jazz Festival. And it caused a big surge in his popularity in that country, where he easily found well-paid work. Also in 1951, he married Elizabeth Ziegler. Within a couple of years, he was a major celebrity and a national hero in France, even though the general public in the U.S. never did know who he was. Bechet's last decade was filled with exciting concerts, many recordings, and infrequent visits back to the U.S. before his death. His colorful memoir, Treated Gentle, although it embellished and frequently was inaccurate, Treated Gentle remains a staple account of the insider's view of the New Orleans tradition. Now, Bechet died near Paris of lung cancer on May 14, 1959, on his 62nd birthday. He's buried at a local cemetery. Duke Ellington paid tribute to his former band member. Of all the musicians, Bechet, to me, was the very epitome of jazz. He represented and executed everything that had to do with the beauty of it all. And everything he played in his whole was original. I honestly think he was the most unique man ever to be in this music. But don't ever try and compare, because when you talk about Bechet, you just don't talk about anyone else. Thanks for listening. This is your host, Sean, and glad to be back and giving you a few new shows. And you know what? I'll catch you on the flip side.